You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I want to talk about this exhibition and the film that you've made, but I want to start because a lot of what you do is informed by who you are, which is really, really important, I think, in the film. And you have told us bits and pieces here. Can you maybe explain a bit about your journey to becoming who you are in terms of the artwork that you do, the visual performance stuff, but also then how you kind of came to be in London?
Right, so I started off as a young child. I was always quite creative, and I was always interested by dance. So when we moved from Whanganui to Auckland when I was about 4 years old, I was kind of encapsulated in this whole idea of creativity, movement, and performing arts. And then I started off actually in mainstream schooling, and then when I was about 7 years old, I asked my mother if I could go and learn te reo Māori. So she enrolled me at a Māori school, and then I did that from primary all the way into high school. And for me, having my culture as like, you know, having my culture there every single day was something that was became normal to me and something that I actually needed. And for me as a dancer growing up in Auckland, it was amazing because there were so many opportunities and I was always in the studio. And I kind of guess that was a way of me kind of keeping out of trouble because I didn't really have time to, you know, go out and party and stuff when I was younger because I was always dancing. And it wasn't until I actually got older, and then in 2015, I was actually studying at Auckland University, and I was selected to represent New Zealand at the Indigenous Dance Residency in Canada. And after I actually finished the residency, my mindset had kind of changed, and I was like, actually, you know what? I want to create my own work. I want to be an individual artist who was making and creating work constantly that actually highlighted topics that I really feel strongly about. So that's where the journey really began. And then after that, I kind of started to develop more in terms of I started writing more and started doing poetry. And then when I went to London and came back, I came up with this idea of starting Travelling Feather. And at the beginning, it was just like, I want to go on Facebook and create some videos, and I want all my brown people to be like, yes, queen. And after creating my first couple of videos and people were starting to respond to them, and I realized people actually liked this and it was actually something that was needed, I continued to do that a bit more. And then when I was in New Zealand, I was actually working as a youth worker, and I had been helping all these young people, and they would tell me, oh, I want to be this and I want to do this. And I'd hear all these amazing stories, and I'd be telling them, girl, you can do this, or boy, you can do this. Keep fighting for what you want to do, and break those stereotypes or break the mold that society puts on you to go and follow the exact same pathway as everybody else. And one day I had this young person say to me, you know what, you always encourage me to do what I want to do, but what are you doing for yourself? And I was like, oh my God, you actually are right. I might be dancing here and there and teaching classes, but I'm not doing something that fulfills me and fulfills my art to the extent that I really want to. So then I came up with this idea. I was going to actually move to Canada because I had kind of just gotten back from Canada. And then for some reason that ended up becoming London. And I knew nothing about London. All I knew was about the Queen and all the like Notting Hill Carnival and all the different things that happen over in the UK. But I didn't have a hell of a lot of knowledge about the art scene over there or just about London in general. So I was going over there with my eyes pretty much closed. I've always been someone who fights for Indigenous rights or fights for my rights as a human being or people of colour, but it became more prevalent in my work. I think the more that I grew up and the people that I surrounded myself with, I became more unapologetic about my work. And that's pretty much how I got to the places that I have got into with my work, is by just being unapologetic and really keeping it raw and keeping it real, because there's no point really putting, like, fabricating things or making things any less because you're scared to offend anyone. So sometimes you just, for me anyways, I had to get over myself and just realise that this is your artwork, so be proud of it and don't hold back for anybody.
I want to come back to unapologeticness and I want to come back to London, but I want to pick up on what you said in terms of when you kind of reached that point where you decided, actually, I want my work to be about these ideas or issues that I feel really strongly about. What are those issues?
I feel like there's quite a lot of different issues. Like, someone when I auditioned for this show that I was actually a part of, which was Hive City Legacy, they asked me, what pisses you off? What makes you tick? What makes what makes you angry? And I had all these different ideas, but I hadn't really peeled them right back and couldn't really put them into this like one answer. But there are a lot of different things that, you know, drive my work, I guess. And a lot of that have been from my personal experiences or experiences of my friends or family. And just kind of like actually showing that this does exist. Like a lot of the issues that I cover do end up coming back to race and racism and kind of combating that and actually showing, hang on, just because we live in New Zealand doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It may be subtle, but it still does happen. And for me, it was really important to highlight all the different things and the feelings of how people of colour feel, not just Māori or Pacific, but also our black communities as well, and really just highlighting issues that not many people want to talk about or not many people know a lot about. So yeah, definitely those issues. And then there's just also issues about like gender and sex and things like that, and how in the Pacific lens we've had all these different genders and things like that exist for so many years, yet when it comes to Eurocentric views, it doesn't really fit into the idealistic perception of what it means to be a human, I guess. So it was kind of combating that and really peeling that open, having a look into that. And then I also started to go on this journey of really wanting to take it right back to the times before colonization and really trying to explore the ways and the things that our ancestors used to do back in the days. And I've actually managed to learn quite a lot about all the different traditions that we do, not just on my Māori side, but also on the Pacific side, and also on my black side as well. So just really going back to the roots, the foundation, and really being able to pay homage to our ancestors. That's probably my main thing, is being able to, over all the work that we're doing, it's all about paying homage to our ancestors and really shedding light and celebrating our people and celebrating our melanin and our culture and our magic.
When you were growing up, or when you were sort of developing these ideas or developing your own work and those sorts of things, was there that kind of person that you're just describing, or that sort of work that you're just describing, modelling that already? Was there those people that represented what you've just described for you? Or do you think that this is a sort of time where there are a number of people in, I guess, our generation that are kind of taking what the previous generations have done in this area in terms of decolonizing, essentially, but taking it into this other, they've always done it, but taking it in another step, right? And sort of pushing that out in a different way, and with, especially with visual arts and what you're sort of talking about.
So for me growing up, I was kind of I wasn't really exposed to activism art. Yeah. So as a child, but you'd go to Māori schooling and you'd get told to do this prayer to Jesus Christ, our Saviour kind of thing. And it was kind of like, that was just how it went. You'd do all these colonial things that were kind of just not forced into, but ended up intertwining with a Māori culture. And for a while, I'd always question things. I've been the same since I was a kid. I've always been quite extra and very outspoken. So I'd question adults about, why do we do this? This doesn't make sense. Blah, 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 blah. And a lot of people, I used to have a lot of negative responses from people, especially people that don't really see eye to eye when it comes to kaupapa like that, or they've kind of been conditioned to think in a way that it was colonization was a good thing for us kind of thing. So there wasn't really a lot of that when I was growing up. And I guess it was just kind of just me as a person, and the way that I was brought up by my parents was to just pretty much always be who you are, and pretty much who cares what other people think. That was something that I was told over and over as a kid by my parents, was to not worry about anyone else, worry about yourself. And as long as you stay humble, everything will be fine.
And I guess, would you agree that there are more and more of these people that are fighting for that, and fighting for that kind of representation, or fighting for that platform even?
Definitely. I think there has been a huge resurgence of Pacific artists, not that they weren't existing before, but this next generation are out here doing things around the world and really showing the world who we are, and really fighting for equality and fighting for all the things that our ancestors have been fighting for years. And obviously our ancestors have done a lot for us. There's a lot of progression that's happened since before I was born, you know, but we're now that next generation that have to step up and be a part of that and really push for that to get to where it needs to be. We've got a long way to go, but we've definitely made progress, but we still have a long way to go.
Like a sort of generation born into perhaps the steps that our parents took, and now you have to then take the next steps to push it further. Going back to London, part two, you're found your people, you've settled in, you're feeling good, and you've managed to form some sort of relationship with the Royal Academy of Arts in a year where they are celebrating Captain Cook. For somebody from Aotearoa, raised in Aotearoa and with a pretty specific relationship to Cook and to other settlers and colonisers,
So it's actually quite crazy that you asked that question, mainly because it was actually this year. So this year was like the big anniversary for Captain Cook, the colonizer, you know, and that wasn't the first project that I had actually been approached about doing something for. And it was actually at the beginning of the year. I went to Germany on a wānanga when we went to one of the marais and did some ngāho and really celebrated the space. And I met someone, her name's Jo Walsh, and she pretty much introduced me to the art scene over in London. And I was a part of this exhibition called Tūhuratanga, which was commissioned by the British Library, and I was their videographer for that. And this particular exhibition was exploring not only the way that we as Pacific people that live in the UK feel about Captain Cook, but just really about celebrating us as who we are now, not the image that society knows about us or the image that these historical Western historical documents have said about us. So that was pretty much my introduction to this whole Captain Cook subject. And then after that, we did some more work at the National Maritime Museum, and that was another Captain Cook one. And then I had a friend, I have a friend in London, her name's Ahi Lapalapa Rands, and she also recently did a Captain Cook exhibition in Whitby, where Captain Cook is actually from. And if you are in the UK, or if you ever go to the UK, I don't know if the exhibition's still on, but you'll hear me talking about what I think about Captain Cook and my views as an Indigenous person about Captain Cook. So it had been something that I had been talking about for most of the year, and I ended up doing this show called Hive City Legacy, which was about celebrating black women and femmes of colour and just telling our stories and being unapologetic in that. And then after that show, it wasn't actually, what was it, about a week not a week, but in my final month of being in London, someone that collaborated with our Hive City Legacy show from the Cocoa Butter Club knew someone from Art McCaver. And Art McCaver were collaborating with the Royal Academy of Arts to find a Pacific artist to draw. And that was the whole idea. So originally I was going to go into the space and I was going to perform and we were going to get people to draw me. And I kind of thought in my head, I was like, I don't know if this is what I want to do. And I also don't know how I feel about non-people of colour drawing me and their perception of what they think I look like and what they perceive of Pacific and savage and things like that. So I came up with this idea because I couldn't stay in London any longer to do the Exotic Savage exhibition, and that's kind of how that was born. I don't know if I've gone off topic, but
no, perfect, because now we're leading into you managed to kind of say no, that project is not probably the best way of doing this, problematic, I'm going to go home and I'm going to do this myself. The name of the film is Exotic Savage, The Decolonization. What is the film? How did you make it? What is it trying to say?
So Exotic Savage came out of the idea of the two words exotic and savage. Now for me, the word exotic is a word that is always used to describe people of colour, no matter where you go in the world. And it was something living in Europe that I would hear constantly. People would be like, oh my god, you're so exotic, you look like Moana. And it got to a point that it kind of pissed me off. And what a lot of people don't understand is that exotic is a way of kind of othering people, and that word actually just means strange or foreign. And for me, it was like, I am not strange, I am not foreign, I'm not an alien, stop calling me exotic. And it came down to this idea of people just constantly exoticizing me because of the color of my skin, because of my ancestry, because of what I looked like. And then there was that whole idea of the word savage being a word that was really used in Western historical documents by the missionaries or by Captain Cook or whoever would come to New Zealand or the Pacific and write about us. And it wasn't just Indigenous people from the Pacific, but it was also Indigenous people across the world were called savages, or even just people in colour of general. Savage was a constant word, and that was a word that was used to compare us almost to animals. And for me, it was about reclaiming that and being like, I am not an exotic savage. So that's how I came up with the name for Exotic Savage. And then it was also that whole idea of decolonizing the mind through art, and that's why I called it Exotic Savage, the Decolonization. So this particular film, there were three aspects to the film. So the first aspect was coconut oil and the relationship between Pacific people and the scent of the Pacific, which is the smell of the coconut. And I explore that whole idea of how it related to my childhood and how it reminded me of the thousands of women I'd see at church and just smell this heavenly scent of coconut. And then halfway through, I start to talk about the derogatory term of coconut and how it is a word that was used to explain us in a way that wasn't very nice. And then the second aspect I looked at was hair and the relationship between women and hair, and how in Samoa we are told to tie our hair up, to not look in the mirrors at nighttime, to cover your mirrors, and if you don't, you're going to get taken away by the spirits. And for me, that was a way that we were told to not do these things in order for us to conform and to be not less, but to kind of just be more conservative. And I thought in my head, I was like, this is so stuffed up. Like, we should be able to be out there and proud about our sexuality, no matter what we're doing and no matter if we are women or not, you know? So that was the second aspect. And then the final aspect was about our feet and the connection that we have to the ground, so that no matter where you are in the world, you always know that you are home and that your ancestors are following you no matter where you go. So that was very important for me to show in London, because I have a lot of Pacific and Māori friends, or Māori is Pacific, but a lot of people from the Pacific and friends from the Pacific that were going to this exhibition, and they don't get to come home all the time, you know. So for them to be able to feel like they're at home, and then to remind themselves again that no matter where you are, home is always inside you, no matter the time or place or the season. So that was the three aspects that I looked at. And then I wanted to use people from all walks of life. I didn't want to just show people who were artists. I didn't want to just have artists that were women, or only have women, or only have men. I wanted to show everyone. So there was a wide range of people that I filmed. So I wanted to get your auntie who lives in her van with her cats, and I wanted to show your sister that's getting her degree, or your brother who is a tattooist, or your friends that are DJs. I wanted to show everyone and show them authentically and how they are, because I really wanted to break down the stereotypes of this word exotic savage. So that was the whole idea behind it. And it was so much fun to work with all these different people, like to hear their stories, because not only would I film them, but they would also be sitting there sharing what they've been up to, and then what they think about the project, and then what they think about the words exotic and savage. So there were a lot of different elements and contributions to the final product in the end, in terms of my poetry and then the way that it all worked out.
So you had those discussions, and that sort of helped inform you writing the poetry?
Definitely, because I didn't want it to just be from my point of view. I wanted to tell them what I've written or what I've been writing and how it's going to come through, and then they would kind of add on to it, and I'd be like, oh cool, so this, I want this to represent all of us, not just me. So yeah, that's why I wanted people to be themselves, because I wanted to show people that are happy, people that are angry, people that are sad. I wanted to show all the different elements and to show that pretty much Pacific people are not all the same. We are all completely different. Don't put us all into one box.
Oh, touching on that sort of difference, but also going back to what you talked about in terms of unapologeticness, and that comes through, you get these people to talk about these things, but you mm-hmm. also get to them to state who they are and who they are not. That's what you wanted to showcase to London?
Pretty much. So what I also wanted to show to London was that we are so multiracial, we are diverse. And when I'd go overseas, a lot of people don't really understand the concept of being multiracial. They can only understand the concept of being mixed race. And when they think mixed race, all they think is African or Caribbean, and then something from Europe, whether that be Spanish or whether that be British or Welsh. So for me, it was really important to shed light on the different communities that we have within the Pacific community and to show that, yes, we do have Afro-Polynesians that exist. I think that was one of my important factors to show, was because growing up in New Zealand, I was never ever classified as being part black. It was something that was kind of just pushed to the side. And when I'd try and say, be like, oh yes, I'm Cape Verdean and I'm Polynesian, I'm part black and I'm part Polynesian, people would look at me and then be like, no, you're not. You're just an islander. And for me, it really hurt me growing up, because then I started to kind of deny, I just stopped talking about it and didn't want to engage in conversations to do with it, because a lot of people would just look at me and be like, no, you're just a Polynesian. So for me, it was important to shed light on the fact that, yes, we have Māori Jamaicans, we have Samoan Cape Verdeans, we have Māori Ghanaians, we do exist, and our stories deserve to be told as well. So that was definitely important.
I think, well, because something that's quite powerful in the film, is especially at the end, in terms of people saying, I'm not an exotic savage, because you talked about the audience of your Pacific friends seeing this, but it will also be an audience of Pākehā people who, white Europeans that aren't actually Pākehā, because Pākehā is specific to Aotearoa, but people in Britain who often don't have an understanding of colonization as we understand it here, and that could be quite confronting. Was that your purpose?
Definitely, that was definitely my purpose. So for me, going into this, I had a few people be like, oh, do you think this is appropriate? Do you think people are going to be offended? And I just had to pull myself back and be like, firstly, this is my art, don't tell me what to do. Secondly, that's the point. I didn't really care if you liked it, if you were offended by it, or even if you did really love it. All I wanted was for people to react. If I got a reaction from you, then I'm happy, because it made you think. And there was definitely people that were offended. I had the girl who was facilitating the exhibition in London said this lady came up to her and was like, I was very, very offended by this video. And then I just said to her, I was like, good, I really like the fact that she was offended. Now tell me why. Why are you offended by this? For me, at the end of the day, this project wasn't made for white Europeans. I know that they were going to see it and that there'd be a large audience of them, but this was actually made for our people. I didn't make this for anyone else except for people of the Pacific. And then, of course, there were people that were like, I love this, I learned something from this. But I guess if you're ignorant and you don't want to learn, well, of course, you're going to be offended by this. But yeah, there were a lot of different points that I cover through it that would have definitely had some eyebrows raised. But for the most part, I'm sure a lot of people did end up enjoying the video, and a lot of the New Zealanders, the Pākehā New Zealanders that were there, they understood it because they get it, because they know all about colonisation here. Well, not everybody, but they have more of an understanding because they're from here. If you go to places like the UK, I've asked so many people if they know who Captain Cook is, and they think I'm talking about Captain Hook. And I'm like, no, not the one on Peter Pan, it's the one that came over to New Zealand and stuffed everything up for all the Indigenous people.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.